What if you could go back in time and change the past? Would it destroy the future? Tomorrow, Timeless premieres.
This guy went back in time, trying to rewrite history. It could change the present in ways we can't predict.
Critics are calling Timeless thrilling, eye-popping, full of action and adventure.
Who are you? We're actually...
This is Dr. Dre. I'm Nurse Jackie. We're from General Hospital.
Timeless, season premiere after The Voice, tomorrow on NBC.
Hey guys, what's happening? Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Fear the Walking Dead Season 2 finale after show for AfterBuzz TV. That episode was insane. 2 hours of content. We can't wait to break down everything for you. I got Simon Thompson here. We're going to see you guys in just a second.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
We are coming to America. We're I told here. You. Well, we are right here, actually, right now. Yeah. Told you.
What you call it?
They're coming to America.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I called that weeks ago. And also,
100%.
Neil Diamond, happy Rosh Hashanah.
Happy Rosh Hashanah.
To all our Jewish fans of the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, great timing.
Yeah. Yeah, welcome to the show.
I don't want to think they did design the finale of the season around Neil Diamond and Rosh Hashanah.
Or Rosh Hashanah.
Just putting it out there.
Yeah. So. I don't think they did, but you know what? If some people believe they did and it's good for them, then great.
Yeah.
I'm hats
We're
off.
Okay with people thinking that.
You already took your hat off, so hats off.
I did. Yes, although I have it here if you need me to put it back on again. Suddenly realized before we were going live that I still have my hat on.
Yeah. Hey, it's okay, man.
So, my lucky hat.
It's your lucky hat?
I don't know why I said I'd have a lucky hat. Don't have a lucky hat.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Well, that went well.
Yeah, guys, welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Welcome to AfterBuzz TV. This is the Fear of the Walking Dead Season 2 finale episode after show.
Yeah.
It was 2 hours long.
What?
A lot of crazy stuff happened. I'm your host, Ben Bateman, joined today by Mr. Simon Thompson.
Hello, I'm Simon Thompson. You can find me on Twitter at ShowbizSimon, on Instagram too, and on Facebook, this is Simon Thompson.
Ashley Chapman is normally in the third seat. She is not here tonight, unfortunately. She's sad to miss.
She got taken by the walkers.
By someone with a very particular set of skills.
Yes. Yeah, Liam Neeson zombie.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she couldn't make the show this evening, unfortunately.
Yes, but she will watch it, and if you tweet at her, @Ashley_Chapman,
yes.
She will be able to respond to you about her thoughts, if you guys particularly would like to hear what she has to say,
because
she's going to be telling us. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram, and of course, guys, if you can follow along and give us a rating or review on iTunes, it helps us stay high in the standings. We provide free content here at AfterBuzz TV. We'd like to continue doing that, and a way to do it is if you help us with a good rating and review. So leave your thoughts below in the comments, and we'll check everything. We'll respond to you, but let's get into the episode. Actually, wait. It's a big thing.
It is the big thing.
It's a birthday week for you.
It is birthday week. I'm officially older than I was before my birthday.
Ah, 29 comes but once in a lifetime.
In your life, if you live 29 years.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it doesn't.
Special.
They don't make cards for that.
No.
Do they?
I looked at Walgreens. They didn't have this.
They didn't. Well, you went to
29.
Walgreens.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I bought us this sparkling for your birthday.
Yes.
So if I'm going to spill it, I think if
Thank
I reach
you.
Too far across the table here.
Do we have to do that thing that they do in the movies where we toast for Ashley because she's not here? Like,
yeah, we absolutely
Here's one
should.
For my homies.
That's right. Was that
we
like,
should do that.
Was that your Dr.
That
Evil?
That was my Dr. Evil.
That was your Dr. Evil.
Throw me a bone here.
Yeah, right.
Thank you.
Those are good movies.
Thank you. They are good movies. I had that conversation with the director of those movies just very recently.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. I broke into his house and said, I love your films.
Who directed those movies?
Jay Roach.
Oh. Mm. I love the first one.
You learn stuff on this.
You know, the first Austin Powers, I've argued many times, if you were going to make the top 10 comedies of the 90s, I think the first Austin Powers absolutely makes that list. Because it's like 99, I think.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's talk about the show.
Let's do that. Shall we? The Fear the Walking Dead.
Yes. Well, let's cheers to Ashley, and then we'll get into the show.
Exactly. Let's do that.
So
and
miss you,
Ash. Happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday to you. So, guys.
Yeah. Mm. A lot went on, but we've been kind of hoping that that would be the case pretty much since the start of the second half of the season. It's been a bit meandering to get to this kind of, crazy. Craziness.
Great finale.
It went crazy.
I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
And absolutely, it's been meandering. I think we've alluded many times in conversations on this panel about the fact that it seems like they stretched out season two by about 7 or 8 episodes in a way to bridge to season three. And it really did feel that way tonight because so many things wrapped up. We got things that were missing from this show in general.
Yeah.
The first one that we looked at each other was like Nick has that moment where he gouges out the zombie's eyes.
Yes.
And it was like, where has this been? That's exactly the kind of thing that makes it makes these kind of shows awesome. They're gory, they're gruesome, they're intense.
Mm.
Like, it was just like, yeah, you're jamming your thumbs through the eye sockets into the brain of the walker.
Well, that was even after zombie attacks, pushes him over the thing, and it's just like, hang on, where has this been for the last 10 plus episodes? But it does go to show that when Fear the Walking Dead turns it on, it turns it on and it turns it up.
Well, I think season
one...
So
they can deliver these moments.
Season one largely was very good. The pilot especially was great.
Yeah.
And I think that the first half of season two was quite good.
Yeah.
Quite compelling. It was just a lot of the stuff towards the end of the first half of the second season, and then a lot of the stuff in the second half that slowed down. It wasn't so much that it was... I wouldn't ever go as far as to call it bad. It was just that it was...
No.
It was uneven, is what you said.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to put it.
And I think even the strong episodes, there were kind of things that really worked that had clearly had a lot of thought.
Yeah.
And things that kind of didn't. And there was a little bit of that tonight, because afterwards we had a little discussion, because thank you to everybody for being very patient with the show this evening. There's a lot of shows going on tonight, so we were a little bit delayed, so thank you for that. But we noticed that kind of the only negative thing about the two episodes tonight was the fact that, talking of loose ends, we saw... Well, I think the problem was not what we saw, it's what we didn't see. People kind of disappeared and we lost characters, either really quickly or without any reason. People who've kind of been a key part of scenarios before. Really good one that stands out to me is Eileen, the mother of the bride,
yeah,
who a couple of episodes ago seemed to be quite, you know, a character that was going to have something to do, was going to have, you know, some sort of clash in there. And we haven't seen her since she stabbed Strand. And obviously now we've left the hotel. I don't see the show going back to the hotel.
Right.
So what happened to her? It kind of...
She's locked in a hotel room, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. She's dead.
Or something. I
maybe.
Mean, maybe they
Busy?
Felt that the only relevant part of her contribution to the story was being, you know, stabbing and then being hidden in a room. So perhaps that's the thing. What I would like to do, because this is the final episode of the season.
Yeah.
And I think rather than... I mean, we just watched essentially a feature film. That's the length of the episode we just watched. So rather than trying to break it down piece by piece, I think the thing to do would maybe just be to cover character by character.
Okay,
and I think
good
that'll
idea.
Kind of weave the stories together. So
sure.
Let's start with a character that we all saw this coming.
Mm-hmm.
Chris.
Yeah.
Start with Chris. Now, what did you think about Chris dying essentially not in the present tense? Like actually seeing his death happen in a convoluted memory?
Well, I'm kind of split on this one, because I'm not entirely convinced that what was described as happening... Obviously, we knew their original version of what happened with the truck flipping and, you know, him being in the front, and then, oh no, you know, what did they pull him out? I still don't think that we know exactly what the truth of that situation is. So I think that even though we've seen on the show that Chris was put down... I think that was, as we saw other sort of versions of the events, I think that was just what Travis was led to believe. So I'm thinking that either they didn't put him down, he ran away.
Yeah.
Or, and they just told Travis that they killed him because they wanted to get what they wanted, which was to be set free.
Right.
Or Chris actually got bitten by a walker. And I said this at some point, because outside Colonia, there was a walker with dark hair and a light top, which was pretty much what Chris was wearing last time
you
saw him, kind of walking around.
Nick,
and I'm
Nick
wondering,
passed him by, yeah.
Yeah, Nick passed him. And I'm just wondering if that is actually what happened to Chris. And I think we're not going to see him again, potentially.
Yeah.
But if we do, I think it's the other option of the he actually ran away.
Got it.
Rather than... anything else.
I was thinking about what would the Bromigos' real motivation...
They're the worst friends ever, aren't they?
The worst. Yeah, the worst. What would their motivation really be to lie? Because if they could lead Travis to believe that Chris had run away, let's say they could say that. Chris ran away. He was scared. He ran away. That would be enough. Like, they didn't hurt him, so maybe Travis would let them go. I mean, I'm trying to think what... Coming up with a lie... that involves killing him to his dad? That doesn't seem like a great way to get out safe and sound.
Okay, I think they said that they killed him because they thought that that might weaken Travis. That might break him. In which case, they were going to be good to leave. I don't think they thought that Travis... I think they thought Travis was a bit of a pussy, to be honest with you.
He's acted like kind of one a lot of
yeah,
the show,
and I think
the
they've underestimated him. And I think they were kind of like, okay, well, if we tell him we killed his son, then, you know, he'll realise that, you know,
yeah,
oh, this is terrible, I'm going to collapse, I can't take this on, and they're still going to be free to go.
Yeah.
But there's that resolution. They don't have to admit their own failure in a situation if he did indeed run away.
Yeah.
But also, they look like badasses.
Right.
And I think the only thing they had, I mean, you saw them in the basement with everybody else that they came in through the gates.
Yeah.
They were kind of like, they were making derogatory statements about, you know, the Mexicans that they had there. And you take them out of the situation, they realize that they're in trouble. They kind of turn into to kind of
little sissies
themselves.
I agree.
So I think they were kind of, the reason they did it, I think, was to either try and get what they needed, which was to get a car and get out and then be safely on their way. And the easiest way was to break Travis and say, sorry, dude, we killed your son.
I thought it was a strange decision for them to show us that in a memory like that. It's not necessarily bad. I just was sort of undecided. There was a lot of tension building throughout this season with how Chris's season was going to end. I think a lot of us suspected he was going to die, that Travis was probably going to have to kill him. I called last week that Travis was going to kill the Bromigos.
Yeah.
That he was going to have to kill them both and beat them to death.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. And
I predicted that Chris would die.
Yeah. And I think him beating them to death, I think, is a correct decision for the show. That, to me, was people break. He broke. That's exactly what you need to have happen for a character like that, for him to stay in the show and be believable.
And there's no other way that they could have had Travis break that would have been believable, apart from going completely apeshit, which he did do.
Yeah.
There would have been no other situation within that. They would have had to create something completely new to see Travis switch like that.
And I think if you had put Chris in the present tense in a situation at the hotel and he had somehow died at those guys' hands and then Travis was to flip, I guess it would have been very kind of melodramatic and distracting. It's a lot to throw on the plate of this episode. So I actually think putting Chris's death in the past tense like that maybe is actually okay. That's that was kind of my justification thing about it, was that I think if you try to set up a scene where somebody's holding a gun and it's a lot. And I think you get enough action with Chris not even being in the scene.
Yeah.
Already. So let's move to Travis, because we're already talking about him. Travis has now broken. He had some great interactions with Madison this episode.
And she had some really interesting ways. It was really interesting to see. I mean, obviously, we saw last episode, obviously, count tonight as one episode. Last week, we saw Madison talking, apologizing to Travis for how she reacted to Chris's behavior. Tonight, we saw Alicia do that. And I think it's almost like they wanted to absolve Travis and put Travis in a headspace where he was going to be okay to come with them to join, either to leave the hotel or to stay in the hotel and give him a reason for not going back out there. So I think they just really needed him to get him on side. But, you know, Madison was fiercely protective of him.
Yeah.
So I think they all still felt that he was fragile. He was broken, but he hadn't gone broken with a capital B.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the episode starts and she and Travis are talking, right? Mm. And she realizes that these guys were Chris's guys.
Yeah.
So she tries to exile these guys without Travis knowing. Travis sees and he runs down and he does the thing that we've seen Madison do now, where you become irrationally causing a scene and all kinds of nonsense because you want your kid back, which I totally get. I have no children, but I understand in the context of when you're trying to drive characters to do anything in any storytelling, you need the stakes to be incredibly high.
Mm.
There are few stakes higher than your actual offspring. The well-being of your offspring, I think, seems to drive many characters to do, right? It's life or death. So I think that's why Travis is yelling and he's, you know, where's my son? Where's Chris? And the scene happens with these guys. And I think that the way he breaks, going a little crazy, he shuts the door on our boy's head, who ends up getting brain surgery and going.
Yeah.
But I just think that Travis totally losing it was... It was so satisfying in the most sadistic way possible. It was like two seasons of this guy being so passive and not getting it. Just over and over and over and over again. You won't win by trying to talk people out of violence. It's not going to work in this world anymore. There's a couple references in the episode. The old rules don't apply anymore, right? Madison says to Travis, in this new world.
Yes, she does.
She says this line, right? So, and then in their conversation, after he's killed these guys, she looks at him. She's like, you think you're bad? I'm worse. I understood what you had to do.
Yeah.
I'll understand when you do it again, because you're going to have to do it again. And that was just like, whoa. She's like, You're a killer. I embrace you for being a killer.
I think she tried to protect him for a while. She tried to bring him back from the edge by saying, you belong here, etc., etc. And then it was this whole thing where, obviously, he did suddenly explode. And that was him kind of actually saying, I think mentally he wanted to be on the same level.
Yeah.
As Maddie, because obviously Maddie's progressed to that, and he's lost the only thing, aside from Maddie, that he actually had to hold it together for, which was Chris. Once he thought that Chris was dead,
yep.
He was like, well, I'm just going to go loco like Maddie and go serious badass. It's just that he went in a very uncontrolled way.
Yeah.
It wasn't voluntary. It was more of a pain and a more an emotional thing rather than a needing to do it, which Maddie appears to... You know, she has a reason for killing.
Did you think that Travis had it in him to like smash someone's head with his boot?
No, I was quite surprised with that. I thought he was going to do it using implements and the chair and stuff like that.
And the glass. You saw glass on the
shelf. Yeah, there was
a lot of
things. And when one of the guys, I think it was Derek, who broke a chair.
Yeah.
On Travis. I thought Travis was going to utilize things like a broken chair leg or
like
something
chair
like
leg.
That.
I thought the same
thing. And I was like, okay, what's going to happen? But I was very surprised when he did the stamping on the head because that's inhumane. I mean, obviously, kicking someone's ass to that level is quite inhumane anyway. But that's brutal.
Absolutely.
That's brute force. So
this all happens. Yeah. That's where like our part one of the finale ends, actually. And then it picks up with them, you know, seizing Travis essentially and throwing him into the timeout. And Maddie has a discussion with Strand and Alicia. You know, we need to get Travis back. We'll leave with him, is what Alicia suggests.
Yeah.
And we'll get to Strand in a moment. We'll wrap up Travis's story first. But they get Travis back. They're going to leave in the morning. Mm-hmm. And then our boy, is it Oscar, who's got. Was it Oscar whose head got smashed in the door?
Or was it Marco? No,
Marco's the bandit.
That's right, yeah.
So Oscar's head that gets smashed in the door. I mean, let's just talk about that scene really quickly. While we're there. Because that was like one of the more gruesome things I've seen on this show. Mm. That was intense stuff. Alicia goes down there to talk to him. And he's like, well, his brain's swelling and I'm going to have to operate. So let me just take this box cutter. Open his head up. And then was the drill of I was like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously wanted to. I mean, they explained it as they wanted to free up some pressure from his brain, but I don't know how experienced they were when it came to doing medical procedures. And I'm going to think that opening up someone's skull is probably not easy.
No, I didn't even...
And it's quite easy for you to accidentally kill somebody if you open up their skull.
Like, let me just drill right next to your brain with this device.
Yeah, considering the only thing you've done to check if they're okay is check their eyes, and it's like... I don't know how much doctoring have you done?
Yeah.
Before you start trepanning people. I don't... Whether he was going to survive anyway, I don't think it would have stopped the rift occurring.
Right.
I think that was a breaking point where they suddenly realized that there was a split in the group.
Yeah.
And it was Maddie's group against the hotel group, and that was kind of it.
Did you question at all their decision to leave that once Oscar was dead and they had stabbed, why am I mixing all my names up now? You have Oscar, the dude with the longer hair, the cousin, who he's not the one who gets stabbed. The guy who gets stabbed is the, I should have them all written down in front of me. There's Elena.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So Elena, her cousin.
Yep.
And then you have the two other guys.
Yep.
So the one of them is the guy whose head gets smashed. That's Oscar. You have the guy with the longer hair.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, in any case, one of them gets stabbed then. Alicia stabs him in the scene. So once he's dead, Oscar's dead. Were you surprised at all that Madison and Travis and Strand weren't like, you know what, we can probably just take control of this place because...
No, I don't think so, because I think if you look at it, there's obviously, you know, the initial guys that were in there, and now they have a load of other locals to look after. I think they realized that very quickly they had become effectively the gringos. They'd become the outsiders, that they weren't going to control it. It didn't belong to them. It belonged to the maid now. And it was back to being that party that was originally in the hotel. There's no way they could have come back from Travis. And I think they realized that, in fact, actually their chances of survival were far better outside together as a group where you know each other. You don't have to think about steps that people are going to take or anything they're going to do erratically or any kind of agenda there. that they were just like, let's make a clean cut. I was quite surprised that Strand stayed there, though.
Yeah,
quite surprised about that.
What did you think his game plan was? They don't even show what happens. They drive away, and Strand is like, I'll manage. I'll take care of myself.
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, he said previously about the fact that he made the option, you know, he had the opportunity to kill himself at one point. He decided not to do it. So I think he was kind of like, actually, you know, I see going out there, the risk out there. He's a very good talker. He could talk them down. He will be their leader. He will be a very strong person now for them. And I think he sees that that would be his role moving forward.
Yep.
And looking after that group and leading that group, whether they want to do it within the hotel or eventually leave that unit. And I think he realizes that Maddie and Travis and everybody, you know, they're strong enough to look after themselves. But these other guys, they're broken now. And he, you know, Strand did it previously. He pulled the group together when it was all very fractured.
Yeah,
you know, with Maddie. And I think he was also kind of a little bit like a scorned lover because obviously now Travis was back and Maddie's alliance is instantly switched to Travis.
Yep.
So Travis is like, I've got my wife back. And, you know, Chris, he'd already said that, you know, Chris is sick. You know, I couldn't see it. He's my son. They're back being a family unit. Madison was talking about being a family unit again. She's very much about proving to her daughter. So I think that's why they suddenly all realize that actually Strand, if Strand wants to survive, he needs to find a group that need him.
Yeah.
Rather than him being part of a group.
Well, because he does say the line to Maddie, are you really going to leave for the man that abandoned you?
Yeah.
That's his line.
Yeah, yeah.
And I liked that line because it definitely had that veiled sort of like, whatever Strand is into Madison for, whether it's companionship, partnership, love,
yeah,
there was definitely a feeling of like, you're now abandoning me.
I don't even think it has to be any or all of those things. I think it's just the fact that there's a reliance of some kind, whether it's emotional or physical. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know if there was anything really ever emotional or physical or sexual between the two of them. I think we would have seen some kind of tenderness.
Yeah, I think so too.
Rather than just purely talking about it. But yeah, I mean, I think I don't think this will mean we've seen the last of Strand.
No, I can't imagine.
I can't. He's too strong a character and he's too good. So I think that this will be a case of paths diverting and then potentially coming back together again.
I mean, I think it's a strong argument that he is the strongest character.
Yeah.
So Andres is the one who gets stabbed.
Right.
He is, I believe, the brother.
Mm-hmm.
And then Oscar is the guy whose head was smashed open.
Yeah.
And then there's the guy with the ponytail who's, I'm looking at the cast list here and it's not even listed on the episode. So
ponytail guy.
Ponytail guy, which is so dumb that I can't remember their names.
Yeah, shame, because he had some good lines.
He did.
Tonight he had some really good roles.
Yeah, so in any case, that pretty much wraps up what happens with Travis. You know, they end up getting to this town and finding out where Nick's going, and that's pretty much that. Moving on from there, we've talked a bit about Maddie, so we will kind of cover her as well. She's involved in a lot of the same scenes, and is there anything Maddie went through this episode that we haven't actually covered already? That she wasn't in a scene with Travis. She didn't have a scene with Alicia tonight. She didn't have a scene with Strand tonight that was different.
No, she was more of kind of the navigator for the group in this episode, which was quite weird because in other episodes she's very much been a catalyst.
Yeah.
But here she's been a peacemaker, or basically, you know, she's been the walking sat-nav by, oh, we're going to go here, I know where Colonia is. She's the one that's putting all the clues together to move them forward, which is another reason why I think they had to leave the compound, irrespective of Travis, because she's still hell-bent on finding Chris and kind of piecing...
Nick, and
piecing together the little bits of the jigsaw that she's picked up through the last half of the season, so going to the grocery store and then obviously going to Colonia. Yeah, I think it was a little bit of a waste of her character because we have seen her being so ballsy.
Yeah.
She kind of did turn into more of a bit of a tour guide, really, towards the end of the episode. And it didn't really... I felt that for something that in the first episode tonight was very strong and they were all moving forward. And there was a lot of, we've already said, you know, sort of, you know, conversations about sharing and moving forward. It just was then like they got to Colonia and it just kind of... disintegrated a little bit.
Yeah, like the plan. Like they left those characters in kind of a dead place. I definitely think that you're right. She was sort of the facilitator, the tour guide tonight. Nick abandoned her. Nick left. So I'm having a hard time understanding. She seems to have these moments of realization. Like she has a moment of realization where she's talking to Alicia. I'm sorry. I'm here for you. You're my daughter. Things like that. but she just doesn't seem to be able to let it go.
It's a bit like spinning plates. I think when she thinks she's, you know, got Alicia happy again and Alicia's on side, she's like, well, I wonder what's happening to Chris. So she starts spinning the Chris plate again and going, oh, okay, I'm finding, you know, I'm getting close to Chris. And then it's like, oh, okay, oh, Alicia's upset again. So I think she's kind of doing that at the moment. I still think she's really torn between the two of them.
Right.
Exactly where their roles now sit. And I think, obviously, we've seen Nick's change quite a few times. So I think she, as she sees them develop, she doesn't quite know where that sits with where she is and where she's progressing. So I don't know what... I don't know when she eventually... I'm assuming she'll eventually find Nick. Where... what that dynamic is going to be. Because I think what they're looking for in each other isn't kind of there anymore, if you know what I mean. It's kind of a weird... It's like round pegs in square holes.
Right. Like, yeah. Even if she finds Nick, it's like, what are you going to get out of that? Well, we'll get to Nick in just a minute. But I agree. He's changed. Nick has changed. She's changed. Everybody is evolving. And the amount this amount of time that they decided to have our main character spend apart in the second season is really their understanding of the world they're in now. As they all understand in different ways the world they're in and take on these different roles to the people around them, it's like they won't fit together as a family unit in the same way that they did when the show started.
There's a thing in the chat room from Jonah Mars who says, does anyone else feel like Alicia is playing the obligated glue role in her family again? She seemed conflicted with having to leave. We did see a lot of that in the first half of this season where she did play that role. That did change. And like you say, you know, this shift in the roles, is she... It would be a little bit lazy if they did put her back into the glue thing, because she's kind of really started to come into her own.
Well, let's talk about Alicia, because I think she had a couple pretty relevant things happen tonight. One of which is that she killed someone, a living person.
Yeah.
That's her first kill, her first confirmed kill. She definitely has been growing up as this season has gone.
Yeah.
And we've talked about Carol Watch a lot, and is it Alicia, is it Ophelia, who are we really watching? Even like, the scene when they got to the compound, the Colonia, and Travis and Maddie once again said, get in the van, we'll just be a minute. It's like, why?
Yeah.
I looked at her face and I looked at them and I was just thinking to myself, why would you even bother saying that at this point? She can handle herself so much better than you can. Aside from her actual physical stature, is that she's a smaller person than you. Maybe she's not as physically strong as you, Travis. She's probably as strong as Maddie. I mean... like, why? In what way is she not equipped to do what you guys are equipped to do?
Well, what I did find interesting was, as you say that, what she's also very equipped to do is find equipment, forage, and set stuff up. Because we saw that in the hotel a couple of episodes ago, where it was all going, you know, shit was hitting the fan, and she was going through rooms, picking out things that would be good as supplies, etc. We saw her working in the hotel, putting together kits so that people would have food and water, etc., etc. And then when they were outside Colonia...
Yeah.
She had the option to go into the compound. Obviously, she'd been told to stay with the vehicle. But she also had the chance to go to the other vehicles and search for weapons, supplies, batteries, torches, all that kind of thing. And she chose to go and look to eventually find Alejandro for no apparent reason, because obviously he'd driven away.
Yeah.
So couldn't see him from where she was in Colonia, to go and explore and join the others rather than to stay and perhaps do the prepping, the foraging, the groundwork thing, which seemed like a different kind of decision for her.
Well, she's definitely growing up and she's coming into her own.
Yeah.
And she's actually, I think since the beginning of the show, and we all know that I have something of a crush on her as an actress. I think she's great.
Have you?
Yeah. I think she's great.
That has never come up before.
But all that being said, I think that her character has evolved really wonderfully.
Yeah.
Like, I think this season especially, they've done some awesome, awesome stuff. Especially like, as you said, her decision to go and look in the bus. Like, that is so much more of a, I'm going to take control. I'm not only going to see the way things are laid out and choose to do X, Y, or Z thing, but I'm going to go, like, search out something.
Yeah.
I'm going to go see what's going on in this. Maybe they missed it. I'm going to go do this thing. Which is great, and she becomes a much more valuable character the more of that we do. So.
I think as far as characters being drawn, I like the way that Maddie's gone. I think Alicia's exceptionally strong, and Strand. I think they're my three favourites that I think they've been handled the best and most interestingly through the season.
Yeah.
Well, I think Travis has done very well. But I just, I mean, a lot of the others have kind of been good, or they kind of come in and out, or they've been, you know, oddly sporadic. But I think, you know, she is the one of the most interesting characters, and the one that I'm probably moving into season three, the most interesting to see where her role goes within the dynamic of the group, and, you know, what happens with that.
She's also from a...
She's also really fit.
So what?
She's really fit. She's really attractive.
She looks great.
Yeah.
I was going to say also from a standpoint of like selling a show with like a sort of like marquee person who's like hot in the... She's the person right now.
Yeah,
she's 100% everywhere. She's like... Even Frank Delane, who seemed like when they launched the show, it was the two of them.
Yeah.
He seems to have faded a little bit. Her star is like very bright right now, which is cool for the show. It's cool to have her on the show. So I have a feeling they will give her quite a bit because it seems to be in their best interest.
Yeah.
Yeah, but overall, I mean, her moment having to take out Andres.
Yes.
Not surprising. I didn't find it surprising, actually. I felt like she was pretty ready to do something like that.
Yeah, and it was funny the way that she approached him and handled him prior to his death with a tenderness that I don't think has been afforded to many humans in the show. It's either been quite brutal or you know, or something else. There hasn't been a great deal of tenderness. There's been a sense of urgency.
Yeah.
You know, there hasn't... So for her to take the time to find this guy that she hadn't seen, to lay him out, to put, you know, to have his head, and everybody was really calm around it. It was possibly the calmest death.
Yeah.
That has been an almost ceremonial.
Yeah.
In the show of the first season or the second season. Everything else has been quite sporadic or in a situation or a moment or something. But this was maybe a moment for them to just take stock and pause. And there was a respect for putting a human.
And it makes sense, too. She's one of the youngest characters on the show. And she's just had to kill someone in cold blood. And it was out of a sense of obligation to protect her family. Your initial question that brought us into the subject of Alicia was, is she playing that glue role again? Is she doing things out of obligation? And it seems like she is. She's doing things out of obligation to... a sense of family, a sense of, I mean, that feeling of leaving with, you know, with Travis. Travis is not her father.
Yeah.
It's her stepfather. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, he questioned her. He apologizes for it. He approaches her and he says, I'm sorry, I didn't believe you. You know, Chris is my son. He's sick. And I didn't believe you. And I mean, I put you in danger. And I think that's a grown up thing of her to do, to get past that and say, you know, I'm leaving with, maybe it's for out of love entirely for her mom.
Yeah.
And knowing how much Madison loves Travis.
I think there's an element of being the glue there, but I think she is, you know, like I said earlier with the her going, you know, her deciding to go in and, you know, go into the compound rather than, you know, looking for things in the in the trucks, et cetera, et cetera. I think there is an element of the glue, but I think that it will change moving into season three because now Maddie has Travis, so doesn't necessarily need to be the driving force for her mum or the sounding board for her mum because they're back together as a team. So I think we will see her move away from needing to be the glue, which we kind of has been a little bit, you know, to now. I think we'll see that in season three becoming less of a case.
Right.
I think the writing will allow that to expand a little bit and for her role to change.
Yeah, I could see that. I could absolutely see that. Let's continue moving down the line. So we referenced Strand briefly.
Yeah.
He wasn't in the episode very much. He had few scenes.
And I have to say, he's recovered very well from his stabbing. I mean, I said about two or three episodes ago that added something to the show, which I think we needed, which was a, you know, a ticking element.
Yeah.
You know, and that very quickly disappeared as quickly as Eileen disappeared, the mother of the bride.
Yeah.
You know, he seemed to be from being like, oh my God, I need drugs, I'm on death's door, to being like, oh, I'll just put my hoodie on.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to come out and, you know, do this and that.
He wasn't doing too much, though.
He wasn't doing much.
He was moving kind of gingerly with his hand on his stomach.
Yeah.
He has a couple moments where he's holding a gun.
Maybe he's got diarrhea.
I think he's just been stabbed.
Okay.
I think that's...
Stabbing would probably be the number one cause for it. I'm just saying sometimes if you drink water, you can get a dicky tummy.
He might have shit himself while recovering from being stabbed.
He may. It happens.
You don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no reason to suggest that.
There is no reason to suggest that didn't happen.
I'm not going
to
tell you that you're wrong.
Next time we see him, we'll ask him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Diego.
Yeah.
Shit self?
Yeah, absolutely.
No.
So his most interesting scene was absolutely the scene talking to Madison where he does say the line, you know, going to leave for the man that abandoned you. And then he also says, I guess it's in the scene before, actually, when Madison first addresses him about these guys, who she references as men. It got me thinking a little bit, you know, in the real world, guys like that, of that age, who act like that, who sound like that, maybe I'd call them men. I feel like I would call them boys. They seem like kids. Yes. They seem like they're college kids.
Yeah.
Once you get into the world of survival of the fittest and every man for himself and strength is what wins, I guess being an able-bodied adult makes you a man or a woman.
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't think they had the physical strength or the mental strength. I mean, I thought, you know, the Bromigos were just... So they were... They had big mouths, but I think they certainly didn't have any of the intellect or any of the brawn to back that up. And as soon as anyone called them on anything, they shat themselves. So I don't think he would look at them as men in a, they're fully grown men. I think it was purely from a they are male point of view.
I guess it just sort of like if you look back into like... I don't know, like Native American societies when kids go out on hunts. Mm. Like they, by the time they're 16, if they have like enough body mass and strength to be like, they're considered to be essentially like men, like able-bodied parts of the tribe.
Yeah,
you know, same thing with women. I think it's just interesting when you think about the designation of girl versus woman, man versus boy. Like,
yeah,
it does change in an environment where it's determined largely on your ability to physically survive. That's like what determines your. Are you a grown-up or not?
Sorry. Or do you think Strand still sees it as a bit of a... is he a bit sexist where he's like, it's men and then women are kind of not as strong as men?
A lot of people think there's an element of that. So writing characters that way is not disingenuous.
Yeah, I mean, whether he meant that in a deliberately sexist kind of way or whether it was just a subconscious thing where they're men, so they're therefore stronger. And he's seen the fragility of some of the women and how fractured they can be in the show. And especially with Maddie, as she can swing between this thing.
Yeah, maybe so. I think in that conversation where, you know, she walks up and she's like, what does she say? Chris is, I think when she's like, Chris is gone, and he's like, that's tragic, and, or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was in reference to that line, but like, he's just like so to the point. And then she explains what's happened, and she says, should I tell Travis? And I liked his explanation in that scene of,
yeah,
I used to be able to think that Thomas was out there.
Yeah.
I can't think that anymore.
But it was about, talking about hope, for the hope. The reason you have hope is because you're going to someone who is alive, that you know they're there at some point down the road. And can Travis handle the truth? If he knows that hope isn't there,
right,
then he's just going to, you know, collapse.
And he kind of did. Like he says,
he was right.
It's a very dark place.
Yeah.
I don't know if he could handle it. And she says it would break him. So,
yeah.
And she's right. I just love how matter of fact Strand is. I think
he's very observant.
That's a great.
Very observant.
He is very observant. I love his ability to recognize that in himself, that I used to be able to hold out hope.
But even in moments of chaos, he's possibly the most observant of the group, because he is able to strategize and find out exactly where everybody else's mental state is and where they are kind of on a spectrum of completely solid to losing their shit.
He is such a survivor.
Yeah, he is. I think he naturally has that instinct. And I think that comes from him being a con man.
Yeah, totally. He's always looking for the angle. So yeah. I think that pretty much covers Strand on the episode. He's only in it a bit. So moving to, we'll use her as the bridge and then get into the Colonia stuff. Ophelia. We get like two scenes with Ophelia
today. Yeah.
Ophelia is walking and the car breaks down and she, like, how, we see a lot of scenes where people are driving on the road. And the thing that the scene starts with is their car breaking down in zombie world. How often do cars break down in zombie world? And how often is that just the place that they decide to open the scene? Because it's a totally like logical place to start a scene. This is the, otherwise you're just like filming somebody driving their car.
Yeah. Right?
Like it seems like a whole lot of cars break down in the Walking Dead world.
Well, there is that, but also if you think of the environment and the fact that a lot of these vehicles might not necessarily be in particularly good condition. So it is a little bit convenient that they do all keep breaking down, but I assume they overheat and there's a lack of gas and a lack of water and stuff like that. I mean, trust me, I'm no mechanic, but I would think that might be the case. But yeah, I mean, at the beginning, as I call it, Hammer Time, where she went absolutely crazy with the toolkit. There was an element of that for me where I was like, this is kind of what we saw with Nick earlier in the season, where he took a vehicle, the vehicle broke down, there were walkers,
right.
He walks off with water. I'm like, great, we're going to see her eating cactus, vomiting and drinking her own piss again.
Yeah.
But then we didn't see her for a long time,
right,
until she crossed the border.
And got shot at.
And got shot at by some crazy guy in camo. His camo wasn't very good because I could see him. So to be honest with you, you need to get new camo, dude.
He shot at her from a distance.
Yeah.
Twice.
Yeah.
Then she ran and hid behind a tree with a knife.
Yeah.
Seemingly prepared to stab him.
Praying.
Then he walked up and she like went for the lunge and stopped.
Yeah.
And he didn't shoot her.
No.
What a weird way to set that scene up. I thought the whole interaction was so strange.
Do you want to know where I think that's going?
Where?
I think obviously he just thought that she was a random Mexican who'd come across the border. So
yeah,
he might be a bit of a, I don't like Mexicans coming over the border type person.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see if this is going to be either someone that her father knew.
Hmm.
Might not be the case. My
right.
other idea is the fact that he might be a random who's maybe collecting women in a serial killer mentalist kind of way.
Huh.
Just thinking. Because if you're a bit of a crazy sex pervert,
uh-huh,
and you have the chance to go out and grab women who are randomly wandering around, give them a chance for survival,
yep,
take them away and have a little commune of women and oddityness.
Yeah. Right, it's a post-apocalypse.
It's a kind of post-apocalypse is a good time to do that, I would imagine.
You would imagine, yeah.
I've never done it.
Nor have I.
Okay.
I've never been in the post-apocalyptic world or rounded up random women as a serial killer.
No.
But if that was a thing that somebody did in a story, I could see it. They did set up... I thought it was interesting. Like, it's just something that television... Maybe it's just our culture does this, but like, he walked up and like, it was a very like sort of submissive exchange. She like put her knife down. She was on her knees. He has a gun. Like, I was like, huh. What a weird thing. They don't give us any dialogue. She doesn't stand up.
Mm.
She doesn't even try to stab him. I just was like, I couldn't figure out the exchange.
Well, Johnny Rico in the chat says he was also getting some very odd vibes from that dude that took Ophelia. So I think we are going to see something that creepy that's in there, whether it's sexual, whether it's, you know, I'm collecting women to do something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think that's something that we'll see for season three.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, and at least, at the very least, they're trying to get us to think that because
yep.
that's probably why they give us no dialogue.
I certainly don't think we've seen the last of her. I think it could mean that potentially where she's tailed off in the second half of this season, once she left the hotel, I think she could potentially be one of the main storylines in
season three. Yeah.
We could see her situation being the opener.
Yeah, I could see that. All right, so moving on from Ophelia into the Colonia storyline, we have a couple things going on. We have
a lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah, yeah. So Nick decides that he is going to wake up in the middle of the night and he is going to steal these drugs and he's going to go and see Marco and he's going to offer to Marco, take these drugs.
I've got Oxy.
Yeah, I'll start making deliveries. And Marco's like, no, actually, I killed that little girl and her parents.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I don't care at all. I'm going to go and kill everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to just go back, Gringo, because I like you, because you've got balls, man. You know, if you guys want to run.
If you just like people because they've got balls, that means you basically like most men, right?
Yeah, he seems like he was a fan of his balls.
Do you have balls?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Then we can be friends.
Yeah, right. So Nick runs back and he decides to tell Alejandro that no, this is not going to fly. They found us. They're going to kill us.
Yep.
And he tells his girl they're gonna leave. And she's like, "There's faith. Faith is the only thing that protects us." And Nick is getting frustrated. And then she has a line to him that is like, I think like the turning point for him when she's like, "Do what you do, Nick. Run." Which to me was. How old do you think the two of them are supposed to be? Nick's like probably 19. Is that about right?
Yeah. I think she's early 20s.
She's a little older than him.
A little bit older, but not that much older.
22 maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like she's just a few years older.
Yeah.
By the end of all of this, once Nick has decided he's going to stay and come up with a plan and get everybody to flee and kind of like run things with her.
He only stayed once he saw what was over the border.
Yeah, right.
He was kind of going like, yeah, screw this.
Right. You think that that was really the only thing that turned him back? You didn't think you had any sense of guilt from leaving?
I think he probably had a sense of guilt, but I think he was probably... There was an element of F you for her.
Yeah.
Because she she had him pinned because he does tend to run.
Yeah.
And so I think there was a bit like, well, screw you. You can stay here and fight for yourself. I'm not going to help protect everybody.
Yeah. And also, like, there's so much talk of, like, faith in the Colonia that's, yeah. like, he's just like, you guys are stupid. What are you talking about?
Yeah, he's completely given up on any kind of faith, whether it's religious or anything else.
Well, I mean, rightfully so. He was in the middle of essentially a small cult. Alejandro was using, I mean, Alejandro's line,
yeah.
My people, you know, and he says, where is it? I have it written down here. He says you mean they could build it to protect you, which, you know, he really sort of sees through him when he sees the fear once he gets bitten, that it's all over and that this guy was full of it, and he was full of it. And I know it's supposed to suggest this idea that faith is worth something just for being faith. That's the point. The point is that this given these people strength, and that's what Alejandro thinks too, that if you keep these people, you know, as a community and you keep them together, they can have a better shot at protecting themselves based on their faith, even though it was a false faith because he wasn't immune.
And his, obviously, you know, Nick's viewpoint is the fact that, yeah, but if your faith is based on something that's completely pointless and false,
yeah,
then it's completely worthless.
Yeah, it's like a false prophet type of
thing. Yeah. But obviously then, ironically, he comes back with faith,
right,
and says, I found a potentially way out, saw these choppers. One thing that confused me about the choppers,
yeah,
there's not a lot of noise generally around these areas, around Colonia and stuff like that, because obviously there's not the hubbub of daily life, the traffic, etc., the mewing of cows. You would hear a chopper on the wind,
even
in the distance,
yeah,
I would think.
Something. Probably.
Or maybe see one flying over or something.
Yeah.
I would have thought you would have seen that.
Maybe it's like a newer thing. Maybe the choppers hadn't been there a while. Maybe they just showed
could
up.
Could be.
Yeah. So once we get to the scene here, so Marco shows up with his guys. They get in. They get, you know, cleverly trapped, and they all die. And Nick takes the whole Colonia with Luciana in kind of like a mom and dad leading the flock kind of thing. And this was an interesting turn for Nick's character because I saw a little bit of a place for him. He's been running and looking for something. In the weirdest way possible, I was totally dissatisfied with it, but totally satisfied with it from the point of view of, like, I get it if I'm one of the writers on the show. Yep. I see where I'm going with this character, and I see where I'm like, okay, I need to eventually put this guy in a place where he belongs somewhere. Otherwise, he's just going to get boring. He's just going to be a drifter.
Which is why I was kind of expecting it to then, for the shit to hit the fan.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, even, I just think he's one of those guys where even when he's trying to be responsible, it just goes horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Whether it's through his own fault or through the fault of something else, he's just not very lucky.
Yeah.
And I think he's just destined to have a life of chaos.
Right.
And constantly bouncing from place to place.
Well, Luciana gets shot when the shit hits the fan.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, she does.
I couldn't quite tell how badly she was shot. It looked like the shoulder, maybe.
Yeah, it didn't seem particularly bad. I mean, it didn't. She seemed upright and she was able to move, so I don't think it was particularly extreme. And obviously, Nick was trying to find out when the guys came and shouted, "We've got a bleeder," which I think is quite interesting. And obviously, these guys, whoever they are, whether they're official American troops or whether they're militia or whether they're just a band of renegades, these guys they're finding are people coming over the border smeared in blood.
Yeah.
So it could have been, we're just going to kill all these Mexicans coming over the border. Or it could be, oh shit, there's a load of zombies.
Right.
Because they've all got zombie guts on their face. We better shoot them all.
They don't really move like zombies, though. So these people opened fire on a group that, like, looked like they were moving like people. I think those guys are part of the helicopter group, and I think they're bad dudes.
I think they're bad dudes.
I think it's a similar situation to what we've seen in a lot of these stories. Yeah. Walking Dead universe or others where it's like, a sort of military compound group of people who, you know, are sort of drunk with the power of controlling things and take what they want and kill people when they want to.
I think if they had been good dudes, I think it would basically be a sign that the show was not going to go to a third season.
Yeah.
I think if they'd have wound it at where Nick and all these other people had managed to find safety, I think we would have seen. Because I did wonder when Alejandro was being put down, where it was like, okay, that's nice. That's people finding some sort of quiet, some sort of solace.
Yeah.
Strand's gone. Ophelia's somewhere in America. And if that had been, okay, we can airlift Nick and all these guys out, that would have been a point where if it had for some reason turned out that the third season wasn't going to happen, it would have been an ending, perhaps the most fulfilling ending.
Yeah.
But we would have known what happened to all these guys who left the compound.
Yeah, it would have been something. That's for sure.
But I think by the fact that it went horribly wrong...
Yeah, they're bad dudes.
Yeah, it strengthens the chance that third season.
Luciana might die. I don't think she will. I feel like she's...
I don't think she will.
I feel like she's a relevant character to the story.
Well, we discussed this a couple of weeks ago where we said that there was going to have to be quite a few, you know, characters killed off or disappear off, etc., etc. And I think we said... But I think in order to see Nick's character carry on, you know, in any particular strong way, I think we need to have that union between him and, you know, Luciana.
Yeah.
To be able to do it, to have a relationship. I think they're going to be captive together. They're going to be held together here. So I think they do need that dynamic. I think probably all the other Mexicans are either dead or they're going to be captive.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to see much from them much more now. But I think certainly Nick and her, I think, are going to be fine.
Yeah.
I mean, she has been shot, so she's not okay.
Right.
But I think we'll see them back.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that pretty much wraps up everything.
Yeah.
Right? And did I forget anything?
I don't think so. I mean, we did predict that a lot of these characters were going to come to some kind of end tonight. I mean, I think we knew that Alejandro was not going to make it through.
Yeah, we knew he was going to die. We knew Chris was going to go.
We knew Chris was going to go.
Bromigos,
they were never going to stick around. They were a one-season MacGuffin. Also, there are quite a few characters in this that are quite dislikable. I think they wouldn't really want to have any more of those in there, and they were kind of a one-trick pony. I'll be honest with you, I didn't think they were brilliant actors.
I didn't think they were great actors, and I also thought that, like, I understand the reason to have characters like that in shows like this, but I also think that when characters feel that black and white to me...
They were irredeemable assholes.
Yeah.
You couldn't really do a lot with them. None of them were going to switch sides and suddenly go, I'm going to amend my ways. I mean, Derek, who was the quiet one, was kind of a pussy, really, to be honest with you. And Brandon was just completely unhinged.
Just
we weren't going to see any of them do anything with that. Ophelia, I would have liked to have seen more from her this episode. I think she was kind of, for the last couple of episodes, underplayed, even if it wasn't doing anything particularly well. Just some more points on that journey for her. But we know she's got to America. We know this is moving back.
Well, it was definitely an interesting thing that they did once they killed Daniel, because with Griselda dying early and then Daniel dying, she becomes a character who's on her own, and she hasn't really formed a crazy strong alliance with any of the characters. Even like Alicia, she was kind of becoming close with, but aside from that, she's just a character that's on her own. So it makes sense to send her off on her own. But I think to some degree, they didn't really know what to do with her. That's what it felt like to me, and that's why I think she is on her own. And she may not last. You may be right; they may open the season.
I think they either didn't know what to do with her, or they already kind of halfway through creating season two. Because obviously, you know, we knew that it was going to be we knew quite early on in season two there was going to be a season three. That was announced very shortly after it started. So I think they might have gone, okay, if we can get one character that we can really develop in season three and give more of a pivotal role, who is the person that we can most likely take out of this equation of the group and build a strong story around for season three? So who can we kind of underplay and waste and do that? And I think that's where we're at the moment. What were your favorite scenes
tonight
in the show tonight?
I think my single favorites were, I really really enjoyed the eye socket kill on the zombie.
That was sweet.
I thought that was a great scene. I really enjoyed the scenes with Strand talking to Madison about Travis. I thought those were great. Just that both the conversation about, I used to see Abigail out there, it's a dark place, and also like, you're gonna leave with the man that abandoned you. I thought those are great scenes. One thing I didn't mention actually that I'm just remembering is that when Nick goes to help cut the oxy for Alejandro, I'm a little bit like roll of my eyes at this point, where Nick has now access to synthetic heroin and he's cooking it. He's sitting there cooking it for someone.
Yep.
And he's not messing with it. I feel like I assumed that was something we were going to get by the end of the season. He's going to relapse. It's not a very entertaining storyline, so I understand maybe that's the reason they didn't want to give it to us. But from a believable point of view with the character, it's a hard pill to swallow, no pun intended.
I think probably the reason they didn't do that was because if he started using again, he would have been a more erratic and unreliable character. And kind of a... He's gone through that, and I think we kind of had Chris for that.
Yeah.
You know, the swinging guy, the independable guy, the guy that you knew were going to, you know, going to do that kind of thing. So I think they couldn't have the two young male characters in it both
do it,
become unreliable. I think, and especially as Chris was so unlikable, they need to have a young male in there who had some sort of potential of not being a massive a-hole. And I think that was just where they saw Nick going. And I think also Nick, you know, he's kind of thinking now, he's got Luciana.
Yeah.
So if he does want to make a go of it with her, being high on
it's not gonna
smack
work.
Might not be a winning quality.
I think my third and last favorite scene, and this would be the one that really took the cake, is just the entire sequence with Travis flipping shit and killing those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, it was from, like I said, from the most sadistic point of view, what a satisfying turn for the show to take. Like,
it was beautifully choreographed from the first, almost like Columbo, like, one more thing.
Yeah.
Was he pulled out or did he die in there?
Yeah, we knew it
was. They were so shit liars, the Bromigas.
Yeah.
The Bromigas were awful. But I liked it right through to the bit where they started knocking in the windows and there was the glass coming in.
Yeah.
And it was just the deadness of his face.
Yep.
I thought was genius. So that and the eye gouging were my favorites, I think.
Yeah. Gruesome stuff.
I love that.
Yeah.
But I was wondering why they saved all of that for the last two episodes.
I totally agree.
They could have done, I think it would have lifted a number of episodes if there was just a little bit of that, oh Jesus, kind of level of gore in there.
Gets that. That's the thing.
It does.
That's the one major difference between the two shows that you're just like, I don't get it, is like, it's exactly things like you're talking about. It's super, super gnarly, like fights with deaths and zombie deaths. And zombie attacks. Those are like, and maybe it's budget, I don't know, but they seem to spend a lot of money on the show and the makeup and the zombies. And so that, I find that sort of surprising. But all that being said, I think that kind of wraps us up. We will not do Carol Watch tonight because I feel like we've covered it so many times.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like there was any change tonight.
So what do you want to see from season three?
I would like to have a little bit more of a unified storyline, and I would like to have a really, really, really strong new character. Like, a new villain would be great. I think we had, like, a really good villain in this show yet?
Yeah.
In this one?
The closest we've came to a really good villain was the woman in the compound.
And she was not good.
I thought Alejandro might become a villain and have some dark secret. I was kind of expecting that to come out tonight.
Yep.
That didn't happen.
And Marco was pretty lame.
And Marco, I'll be honest with you, he was not particularly scary.
No.
Not menacing at all. Neither were his henchmen. Yeah. So it does lack that at the moment.
Like a Negan-level villain that there seemed to be building with Walking Dead, or even if it was like somebody within the group. Like if Strand had a really, really bad guy turn.
Mm.
Like, that's what I think that I want the show to get, is I want more of a unified location. I think I would like to get out of Mexico and get back to America. It seems like that's where we're going.
I think that's where we're going to see season three.
And and I think that would be...
I think even someone the level of the governor...
Yeah, the governor was a bad character in the end. But.
Yeah, I think I'd like to see someone like that who has the potential. I think potentially where you don't know if they're bad.
Yes.
Or whether they're pretending to be bad for a reason to do something. I think that might be quite fun for season three.
I agree.
But we do need to have something in there to step that up. And I'd like to see more gore in season three as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think going back to America is a good thing. I think that'll help the show a lot. I think it naturally had to do something because they've done the water, they've moved through Mexico, it has to go back to America. I am intrigued to see where it's going.
Yeah, I'd agree.
But a strong finish, though.
A great for the finale. Season. I was totally
happy.
For me,
it was a stronger ending to season two than there was for season one.
And, which is funny. It's the same director, actually. Stefan Schwartz directed both the finale of season one and this finale.
Excellent.
I think this was one of the best episodes of the show so far. I was satisfied. It intrigued me enough that I will excitedly tune back in for season three when it opens up, which I think is 6 or 7 months from now.
I think so. So do you want to see full season, or do you want to see a shorter season like season one?
I would love to see a shorter season.
Yeah.
I would love to.
It's stronger, shorter.
I would love to see a shorter season, and if they can develop these characters in this story to a little bit more of a cohesive point where I feel like it's really compelling us, I think you could re-expand it. But I think that this was a long season, and it had some weaker episodes.
Yeah.
And this was a reminder, this episode, how good the show can be, and how good of storytellers these guys are.
Good point. Jack was a villain. This is from Aaron Brody in the chat, and apparently also Daniel. Is going to make. Gail Ann Herder said that Daniel is going to reappear.
He's not dead.
No, he's not dead, apparently.
Wow.
And she would know.
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
Absolutely.
I did say previously that I thought he might not be dead.
Gunnar Gale. She's a genius.
Nice work, Gale.
Yeah. Guys, that's going to wrap it up for us, right?
It is, yeah.
So that does it. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Yes, thank you.
For the full season. We had a blast. Once again, guys, if you want to find either one of us, you can find me personally at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. Share your thoughts and leave your thoughts in the comments below. More than happy to interact. This was an exciting episode. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Showbiz Simon, and on Facebook, this is Simon Thompson. Ben, season 3.
Awesome time.
Till next time.
All right, guys. Take care.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
See you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.